Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 11, text 21. Bhagavams tatra bandunam puranam anuvartinam yataha vidi upasangamya sarvesham manam adade. Bhagavams tatra bandunam. Bhagavams tatra bandhunam puranam anuvartinam puranam anuvartinam yatavidi upasangamya yatavidi upasangamya sarvesham manam adade. Sarvesham manam adade. Bhagavams tatra bandunam. Puranam manuvartinam. Yata vidhi upasangamya. Sarvesham manam adade. Others, please. Bhagavam Sangamya Vaishnavis. Bhagavam Tatra Bandunam Puranam Anuvartinam Yatta Vidhi Upasangamya Bhagavan Shri Krishna, the Personality of Godhead. Tatra, in that place. Bandunam, of the friends. Puranam, of the citizens. Anuvartinam, those who approached him to receive and welcome. Yatavidhi, as it behooves. Upasangamya. Going nearer. Sarvesham. For each and every one. Manam. Honor and respects. Adade. Offered. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Meantime, could somebody just grab a Bhagavad Gita for me off the shelf? Thanks. Okay. Translation. Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respects to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. Purport. The Supreme Lord, personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inner object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. Here, the word yatavidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only because they have no other object for service but the Lord. And therefore, the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees just as it behooves. Namely, he is always attentive to all the matters of his pure devotees. There are others who designate him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness. And a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. Om Ganatam Ananda Shajan Anjana Shalakaya Chakshun and Militam Yena Tasma Shigudavena Maha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakaramayam Dadati Swapadantikam. So this past weekend and maybe the previous weekend, I can't remember clearly, but Siddhanta has been showing memories of Shruti Kirti during breakfast. And so I think it was just yesterday, actually, he showed one, and there was one particular anecdote that I really thought was important, at least for me, and one of the most important messages I've gotten from them so far, and relevant to today's class. So I'll just relate it very briefly. How many people were there yesterday at breakfast? About half, and half weren't. Okay. So for some of you, you'll just heard yesterday, and others not. So Shruti Kirti was a Prabhupada servant for, I think, like 18 months and altogether. And they were arriving at I think it was here in Los Angeles. They just came to arrive in Los Angeles. And there's a lot of devotees to greet Prabhupada. You know, a lot of big kirtan and devotees chanting and devotees, showing a lot of emotion. Some devotees crying out of happiness to see Prabhupada and like that. So, you know, this was all going on. And then they went up, Shruti Kirti brought Prabhupada up to his room there. And it was before his massage. Actually, you know, he was Prabhupada. Shruti Kirti massage Prabhupada every morning. So Shruti Kirti said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, you know, something's on my mind." And he said, "Okay, well." So he said, "Well, you know, all these disciples of you, all my God brothers and God sisters, seem to have so much love for you. They have so much emotion for you. And I don't feel any of that. I don't feel any of that. I don't feel anything." And Prabhupada didn't say anything. So, you know, it's like he had a relationship with Prabhupada where, you know, he was kind of did a lot of things. So that I guess he felt he was going to reveal his mind. He said as much. He was thinking what was going to happen. He was going to reveal his mind to Prabhupada about this, you know, misgiving he had. And Prabhupada was going to say something to, you know, make him feel so he didn't feel so bad about it, or, you know, put it in the proper perspective. Anyway, Prabhupada was silent. Prabhupada didn't say anything. So, and then Shruti Kirti regretted it. He regretted having said that. He thought, "Oh no, what did I just do? You know, what a stupid thing to say. I just said to my spiritual master, I don't have any feeling for him. I don't feel anything." And you know, and all these other devotees are showing so much affection, and you know, it's etc. So anyway, what could he do? He just did the massage, and then he, you know, did all his duties. You know, he did his Prabhupada's massage. He got his room set up. He went and, you know, later he prepared the lunch because he was the cook, and then et cetera. You know, he did all his duties. And then if I remember correctly, he said it was later in the afternoon. It was about like 4 o'clock in the afternoon Am I getting it right so far? The 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Prabhupada rang the bell, and he came in and paid his obeisances, and he was sitting there, and he kind of had recovered from how bad he was feeling, what he thought was his blunder earlier in the morning, and he paid his obeisances, and Prabhupada said to him, I have a clear blue sky, more or less, because this is 8 hours later. So Prabhupada said, do you like serving me? And Shrutikirti said, yes, Srila Prabhupada, I really like serving. I really like serving you. And Prabhupada said, that is love. Service is love. And I think that much he kind of seemed like he was quoting Prabhupada when he said that. But then I think he was paraphrasing Prabhupada from that point onwards. And I'll paraphrase his paraphrase. Prabhupada seems to say that, it's good that these devotees have expressing these feelings and emotions. That's nice. But really, he said, Prabhupada made the point that the real thing is service. That's the true expression of your love or your appreciation for your spiritual master. So that's, a significant point, because here it's talking about how these welcomers they refer to. Yeah, the welcomers are, expressing different types of feelings, sentiments towards Krishna, and which is good. You know. But we don't have that opportunity. I mean, we're not going to be welcoming Krishna, and we're not going to be welcoming Srila Prabhupada physically anymore. But we can, so we express our appreciation through the medium of service. That's the primary expression of appreciation of a devotee for in our situation, and it's very significant. I mean, actually, on different occasions, Prabhupada used to, in different lectures, Prabhupada made the point that there's different ways of associating, and vapu was the physical when you're associating with the physical presence. That's the Vapu association, and there's Vani Seva, means the service, the instruction. Actually, Vapu means the form, and Vani means the instruction. And Prabhupada, on different occasions, would make it clear that, the point is that Vapu is, it's okay, it's good, it's wonderful, actually, and if you have the opportunity, but Vani is more important, the Vani Seva. At least, even on one occasion, Prabhupada said Vapu is for fools. But, that was one occasion. I mean, you have to always, like Judah Karma says, you have to look at all the things Prabhupada said. I think when the idea was that when it was possible, if it was available, sure, you should take the physical association of your spiritual master, etc. But if it's not, then if you're serving this instruction, that's considered as important, if not more important. Okay? So service is the way we express, way we follow in the footsteps of these welcomers who are being described here by offering service. And the point that Prabhupada makes in the purport is that Krishna, he reciprocates the feelings of his devotees. So using this analogy, he reciprocates the service of the devotees. And that's just as it behooves. Saying as Krishna knows how to reciprocate, the devotees express their feelings through the service, and Krishna reciprocates. And he reciprocates in the form of different ways. He reciprocates in the form of helping that devotee, helping a particular devotee become better at the service that devotee is desiring to offer to Krishna. See, when a devotee desires to serve Krishna in a particular way, Krishna helps the devotee to do that. And this morning, when I was kind of thinking about, the verse and everything, two examples really popped into my mind. One was Jai Chaitanya. I remember one day we were out on Sankirtan together, went to LA Community College. And this was when he was just getting started. It was like, 4 years ago, this time of year, right before the marathon. So at that time, we weren't doing a table. We were just walking up to people and stopping them. And I remember I was watching him, and I was thinking, it seemed like he was really struggling, and it was hard for him. He felt he was uncomfortable, and it didn't seem to be, wasn't didn't appear to be being very successful. And I remember thinking to myself, you know, I should just go up and say to him, you know what? Don't worry. This service isn't for everyone. It's not a... Don't, yeah. No, I was... My analysis was that this guy's not cut out. He won't... He's not going to be able to do this. You know, it's kind of like it's... It's not his psychophysiological makeup, and it's, you know, I should say something to him to make him so he doesn't feel so bad, and then maybe he'll do some other service. I didn't do that. I didn't say anything. I kept my mouth shut, which was good, because what happened was, as we all know, you know, he was very determined, and he stuck with it, and he, you know, he came up with this idea of I could use a table, and you know, and anyway, and he became a very successful Sankirtan devotee. You know, like super successful. And I see that as, you know, Krishna helped him. You know, Krishna gave him the intelligence how to do it in a way that was, you know, worked better for him and helped him get over the, you know, and actually it was just a learning curve. You know, he kind of learned what he had to learn to deal with the rejections and the this and the that, and he became very successful. You know, so Krishna reciprocates and he empowers the devotees who are trying to serve him in a particular way. Another example of that that popped in my mind is our very own Bhakta Brad here. I guess it would be about 3 months ago now, I stopped going on the Harinam because we bought that van and we had to be converted. So while Nisringa was working on the van, I was covering for him in the restaurant, so I wasn't going in on Harinam. And then right after that, I went on a traveling Sankirtan. So it was about 3 months altogether that I hadn't been on Harinam. And just before I stopped going on the Harinam, I remember, I can have this, you know, clear in my mind, we were on the pier. We weren't actually on the pier itself. We were up at the top. We're just where the bridge starts, you know, when you just kind of come off that Pacific Palisades Park and the bridge starts. We would stand there in the Harinam. And I can remember, you know, being there, and Bhakta Brad was attempting to lead the kirtan. He was leading the kirtan, and I was, you know, kind of hearing, and he was like inverting the tunes, and I was thinking to myself, this guy should throw in the towel. You know, he's tone deaf. You know, there's no way this guy's going to be able to lead kirtan. He's tone deaf. But I didn't say anything. Once again, thank God, I kept my mouth shut. But you know, I came back, and the other night I went on Harinam, and there's Bhakta Brad playing the Vedanga, like Vishnu Jan Swami or whatever, you know, and leading in a fabulous kirtan with all the tunes spot on and, you know, tremendous energy. And last night he led the Sunday Feast kirtan, and it was fabulous, you know. I mean, I thought it was a fluke the other night on the Harinam, but then he led the Sunday Feast kirtan last night, and that was so. There it goes, another example of that. Krishna empowers you. You know, if a devotee is sincere, then Krishna empowers you. And that's like, this is not my concoction. The statements are there in the Shastras. There's that verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita about how if one remembers the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, for one who remembers the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, if one remembers the lotus feet of the Panchatattva, a lame man can cross mountains, a blind man can see stars in the sky, and somebody, a dumb person, somebody who can't speak, can recite beautiful poetry. In other words, the impossible becomes possible. By Krishna's mercy, the impossible becomes possible. And Krishna's mercy descends, appears, when a devotee has a very sincere attitude, you know, sincere loving determination to serve him in a particular way. And that's when Krishna's mercy comes into the picture. You see, and once Krishna's mercy comes into the picture, and that's what will bring it into the picture, then there's no, like Prabhupada said, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. You know, there's one passage in the Bhagavad Gita here where it says, we may think of doing something, but it is not always possible, and sometimes we can't do what we like. You know, and Prabhupada goes on to say, but when Krishna wants to do something, simply by his willing, Everything happens so miraculously, that perfectly, that one cannot imagine how it is being done. You see? So that's it. You know, when Krishna wants to do something, and he'll want to do something when he sees a devotee, you know, very sincerely trying to serve him in a particular way, then Krishna reciprocates, and he makes it happen. He empowers that devotee. Okay? So, and that's how anything happens in devotional service. You know, it's just we always have to remember that. You know, that it ultimately it's all dependent upon Krishna's mercy, our ability to whatever service we could do and whatever advancement we can make. It's ultimately all just depending upon Krishna's mercy. I'll read you a couple of sentences from what Prabhupada, one of the nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita. This is 10:11. Yeah. Where Prabhupada clearly states that point. It says here, only by devotional service is the supreme truth, Krishna, pleased, and by his inconceivable potency, inconceivable energy, he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. The pure devotee always has Krishna within his heart, and with the presence of Krishna, who is just like the sun, the darkness of ignorance is at once dissipated. This is the special mercy rendered to the pure devotee by Krishna. But right there, it's clear. Only by devotional service is the supreme truth Krishna pleased, and by his inconceivable energy he can reveal himself to the heart of the pure devotee. So in other words, we don't make one inch of advancement other than, you know, outside that principle. That's how it all happens. Any advancement you're making, or you then one could make, happens like that, that Krishna has to reveal himself, and he reveals himself when he's pleased by our devotional service. And Prabhupada, the devotional service that Prabhupada emphasizes here, in this particular purport, he goes here, I'll just read a couple of sentences here. It says, due to contamination of material association through many, many millions of births. How many millions would that be? How many millions is many, many millions? Somebody give me a number. 1,000 million? I mean, that's a lot of millions, right? Many, many millions of births. So we've got to be patient. So we've been here many, many millions of births, and we're contaminated by material association for that length of time. One's heart is always covered with the dust of materialism. So Prabhupada goes on to say here, but when one engages in devotional service and constantly chants Hare Krishna, two things. Engaging in devotional service, and notice Prabhupada says, constantly chants Hare Krishna, the dust quickly clears, and one is elevated to the platform of pure knowledge. So, back to the basics. You know, constantly engaging in devotional service, always trying to be engaged, and constantly chanting Hare Krishna, and then that's what Prabhupada, at least in this purport, indicates is the solution to the whole problem. So, So Krishna reciprocates with the devotees, and so we should try to appreciate that. We have to, you know, develop an attitude of appreciation for that reciprocation by Krishna. And just in general, that's something we should be cultivating, a mentality of appreciation. And somebody might bring up the objection, or not an objection, but it might come into a devotee's mind. Well, okay, you know, you're saying, like, you're glorifying how Krishna reciprocates with his devotees and how he takes care of his devotees, and it's all very nice. But, you know, what about Dwarkadish? You know, I mean, what about something like that? What about, you know, sometimes tragedies befall devotees, and we just had an example of something like that happening just less than 2 months ago. How do we understand that? That doesn't seem so wonderful, you know. Well, you know, you got to you can't take things on, you know, can't be shallow. You got to dig into the philosophy here. Like, okay, I mean, Dwarkadish met with a tragic accident, and you know, it ended his life, but his spiritual master and other advanced devotees at that memorial service that we had for him expressed that they felt confident that he went back to Godhead. So there, you know, that's pretty good. Somebody, I would take that, be honest with you. if I knew I was going back to Godhead, I'd be ready to go at any moment. So, I mean, and that was the opinion of his spiritual master and advanced devotees. And even if that didn't happen, you know, all throughout Bhagavad Gita, it's obvious he's going to continue his service in some other situation, maybe another body someplace, but, you know, that will take up where he left off. So all the good stuff that's talked about in the books and as promised, we have to remember, it's not all necessarily going to happen. We're not necessarily going to experience all that in this lifetime, maybe. You know, it's some of it's in store for us after we leave this body. But that's okay. I mean, that's the philosophy from day one, you know, that so we have to you know, meditate on that. That and therefore, even in reverses, even when reverses happen, we have to meditate that it's okay. I'm not going to let this shake me. Krishna's got my back, you know. And that's, you know, promised throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, Sarva Dhammam Parichaya, abandon all varieties of religion, surrender to me. I'll protect you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. Prabhupada used to also like to quote, Ananyas Chintayantumam Yejana Padupashate Tesham Nichabhyuktanam Yoga Kshemam Bahamiham. That, you know, Krishna says, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. So, yeah, you know, just be thinking like that, that it's okay. It's okay. It's going to, Krishna's going to take care of the whole thing, you know. That's what's promised in the books, and that's what's going to happen. And I'm going to take shelter of that. I'm going to make the decision, the choice, to place my faith in that those words, and proceed with my life as if that's true. And let's see what happens, you know. What time is it? I don't have a watch. 8:07. Okay. And I'll just make one more point, and then I'll stop. That. So that's, you know, that's the very significant part of cultivating a mentality of appreciation. And also another thing is just to, you can be appreciate how fortunate we are on a superficial level, but on a less deep philosophical level, just, you know. What we have, the opportunity we have of being members of the Krishna Conscious Movement. Like yesterday morning, I was chanting japa, and as I was kind of walking around the temple room, circumambling Tulsi, these words just popped into my head, you know, and I just thought, well, that's pretty far out. Temple rooms don't grow on trees. That's what popped into my head. I don't know where that came from. I was just chanting my japa, and then all of a sudden, temple rooms don't grow on trees. And I thought, well, what does that mean? You know? And then I thought about it, and I was just thinking, like, yeah, right, it's true. It's a lot of, you know, I hardly ever stopped to think about all the effort, you know, that's gone into producing this beautiful temple room. This represents the combined efforts of hundreds, perhaps thousands of devotees for decades now. This, you know, building was acquired in 1970, so that's almost 50 years ago. And so many devotees, definitely hundreds, right? Hundreds of devotees have put in like lots of time, hundreds of hours and energy and money. And some of those devotees are no longer with us in the movement. Some of those devotees are no longer with us on this planet. But, you know, and here we're having the benefit. We're in the position to experience the benefit of all the service and the hard work of all these, you know, devotees. And just appreciating, wow, you know, look at it. This is so many things to be appreciative for about just the temple. What to speak of the temple, the whole community. You know, if temple rooms don't grow on trees, temple communities certainly don't grow on trees. And I just thought, well, yeah, it's good to remember that. It's good to remember how much, you know, how much benefit I'm receiving from the efforts of other devotees right down, you know, since the beginning of the Krishna Conscious Movement. And once again, and the way, the proper way to express, to really experience that appreciation and express that appreciation is to service, is, you know, to pay it back with service. right? Not to take it for granted, but to have a really, to try to, you know, have a really good service attitude, unconditional service attitude, like this morning Savas made that announcement about how, okay, you know, Bhakta Brad raised his hand and said, hey, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up, we're going to need a lot of help in the kitchen cutting up, and Savas, you know, supported that and repeated. Yeah, so that would be an example that, you know, just take every opportunity to look for opportunities. What the speaker, take every opportunity, but even to look for opportunities to render some service to this wonderful community and to the Krishna consciousness movement. That's the way we can pay it back. Actually, Prabhupada said something like, there was one, most of the devotees heard this, there was one time devotees wrote a Vyas Pooja homage. It was actually L.A. temple that did it. And they, you know, they're expressing something, glorifying Prabhupada. And at the end said, Prabhupada, we, you know, how can we repay you? We don't feel there's any way we can repay you, was one, the closing line of the... And Prabhupada generally did not reply to Vyas Pooja homages, you know. It's just something he received and read, and that was that. But he wrote a letter back, and he said, actually, you're right. There is no way one can repay the spiritual master. But if you're at all interested to repay me, then please preach very vigorously like I'm preaching, something to that effect. So that's the idea, that, you know, that's the way to reciprocate. That's the way to repay the Prabhupada and all the devotees, you know, the generations of devotees who have dedicated their lives to trying to serve the Krishna consciousness movement. The way to repay the whole thing is to just try to really surrender and serve via, you know, menial service, as Savas likes to, very fond of saying, perform menial service and any service, take any and every opportunity to try to serve the devotees, to try to serve the community, to try to serve the movement. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Yeah, come on, Frank.
Thank you very much for the wonderful class. Just a comment. I really like the story you were telling us about how Sudha Kirti Prabhu is serving Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada's comment that means service.
Yeah.
Often we hear that the devotees were saying that Srila Prabhupada saved us. And we are really indebted to Srila Prabhupada. So if we really want to pay back or show our love to Prabhupada, then we have to, you know, do something to please Srila Prabhupada. See, ISKCON is the family of Srila Prabhupada. So a good son should bring some glories, you know, to the family of, you know, Prabhupada. We have to, something.
Yeah, and you're doing a good job of that by going out over 300 days last year on Sankirtan. Anybody else have anything? Yeah, Anta.
Thank you for your class, Prabhu. It was very nice. Psychiatrists say that the basis of being happy is being grateful. Psychiatrists say the basis of being happy is being grateful.
Being grateful.
So we can't possibly even be happy in Krishna consciousness unless we're grateful and appreciating all that we're being given.
Yeah. I have something. I just remember something I want to share with everybody. So this is on the point of just how relevant we are, okay? There's this group of scientists in Virginia, and for over like 50 years now, they've been doing study on things like near-death out-of-body experiences and children remember their past lives and, you know, bedside apparitions and all this paranormal phenomena, okay? So that's 50 years of it since they've been started. About the same, they started around the same time as Prabhupada in Virginia. So this is just a brief excerpt from a speech one of them made. Every now and then I kind of go on YouTube and check out and see if there's anything new, you know, from them, because it supports our worldview, you know. That there is something more than just gross physical matter out there. So anyway, so this is something one of them said in a speech he made. He said, if you take the existence of these various rogue phenomena seriously, like what I just mentioned, and attempt to figure out how things must be in order for them to happen, we believe you are driven inexorably into the metaphysical territory shared with the world's great traditional faiths. And then he goes on to say, that doesn't mean it endorses any particular one of them in all details, but that they have certain things in common, and particularly the idea that seems to be emerging most forcefully is that, contrary to the recent spate of attacks on all things religious from representatives of classic physicalism, there is, and this is what I thought was far out when I heard him say this, that there was, there is at the heart of reality some kind of enormous conscious something that we are somehow connected with from the deepest parts of our being. So I thought that was pretty far out. I mean, that's like basically saying there is God. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you know, they won't use those words because that's like a real no-no to, you know. But to me, to hear that from somebody, you know, from scientists, it's like, okay, you know, they're saying an enormous conscious something. So when I, you know, as I said, that for me, it's like, okay, they're basically admitting there is God, and that's coming from scientists. And then, so my question to them would be, okay, so what's the next step? You know, you're finding by all your 50 years of research that this is your, you know, your conclusion that there's an enormous conscious something that's responsible, you know, that enables it for all this. So the next step is to use the human form of life to try to make that connection with it. Let's connect. How do we connect with that enormous conscious something that's a connect that we're connected with from the deepest part of our being? Just what we're doing. That's bhakti yoga. That's exactly what we're dedicating our lives to, a process which is meant to connect us with that, you know, enormous conscious something. It's how this man refers to it, that we're connected to from the deepest part of our being. So we're so relevant. This is what life's all about. What we're doing is what life's all about. This is what we're doing here is exactly what a person is supposed to be doing with their human form of life. We are like the most relevant, intelligent movement that exists. You couldn't be doing something more intelligent, more relevant, and more important with your life than exactly what we're doing here, you know, at 3764 Watsika Avenue. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Jai. Thank you. Mm-hmm.